We're most fortunate that in our part of the world we are easily aware of the changing seasons, especially after all that rain last night, and they show us the rhythm of life and of its changes. And today we arrive at one of those times in church when we mark one of those seasons, as we move into autumn and give thanks to God for the harvest. In a fairly recent trend in the wider church, this time of year is now regarded as creation time. And I'm sure that we're all well aware of the creation stories in the book of Genesis, but there are actually many more, dozens in fact. And the longest account of God's role as creator is to be found in the story of Job, which is why I chose part of it as our reading for today. Now, the book of Job is a fictional story of a man of great faith, enduring a really hard time of testing by the devil. And the rapid decline for Job provokes a series of conversations between Job and God, as well as some rather dubious advice about his friends about why all of this is happening. Most of the story is spoken by Job, or one of the so-called friends, and then there are God's interactions in all of this. Chapter 28 is inset in the middle of all this, but it isn't attributed to any of those voices. It works a bit more like a standalone section that, as we heard, is titled In Praise of Wisdom. And it's thought to be a hymn or a poem spoken by the narrator of the story. And personally, I think that this passage relates to another series of chapters which appear later on in the book, starting at chapter 38. The words attributed to God in this section function to remind God of who he is dealing with and begin in chapter 38 with, "Where were you when I made the world?" And that begins a long description of God's creative work, which is why I think chapter 28 is linked into this theme. But the main difference is that chapter 28, that we heard a portion of, has a different focus of attention, which is wisdom. And the conclusion of the poem is that wisdom can only come from God and is not to be found anywhere else. God is the only source of true wisdom. And there is a link between recognizing that the source of true wisdom and the source of all creation is God. And as such, I think that the faith perspective, and Christian faith in particular, has a vitally important role to play all the time when it comes to thinking about environmental issues that are very much to the forefront at the moment. Seeking wisdom is essential to guide our responsibility in our God-given role as guardians and custodians of creation. There are many voices out there purporting to be authentic and wise, with many of them competing to be heard at the UN Climate Conference in New York. There is the scientific evidence that many would say is now overwhelming in its weight, that our generation has a once only opportunity to change our habits and to arrest the damage that is being caused to our environment, and to do so for the sake of future generations. And it was only a couple of weeks ago that vast numbers of people, especially children, protested across the world to make us all aware of this issue. But there are also people with considerable responsibilities for the well-being of huge countries, who are mindful of immensely powerful economic interests. Places such as, but not exclusively, China and India and Russia and the USA, etc., who see the benefits of continuing or even expanding industries that pollute the world. And some of those leaders either refuse to acknowledge climate change or dispute that it is even happening and provide competing evidence to legitimize their decisions. Who to believe? Which course of action to take? Which version of, and I've put in inverted commas, the truth is real wisdom? I wonder. I'm sure that most of you will have formed your own opinions and answers to such questions. But what about the perspective of our faith? Well, it shouldn't come as too much of a surprise to you that, you know, there is a divergence of opinion even on that one. Take, for example, the interpretations of the creation stories of the first two chapters of Genesis. Some, quite understandably, understand those stories as fixed fact, that that is exactly how creation happened. And they stick with the King James Authorized Version, the English translation of the original Hebrew texts. So I'll read to you what the King James says. God said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." The words subdue and dominion lead to one way of treating the earth's resources. The earth is there for our benefit. Now, I don't usually read the King James Authorized Version, so when I turned to it, I was actually quite surprised to find within this passage the instruction from God to Adam and Eve to replenish the earth. Replenish the earth. Even there is the importance of sustainability. But there is another way of understanding Genesis, one that I prefer, to see the two creation stories as stories. Stories that have teaching value, ways to get us to reflect and understand God's perspectives on life. And as such, they work a little bit like parables. In my view, they are literature, not scientific or historical record. Their function is to describe for us the essential nature of the relationship between creator and created, a covenantal relationship between God and humanity. They tell us that God made everything, including the earth. And they also describe the part that humanity has within the network of all life, and the uniquely powerful role that God gave us all to look after what God has made. As such, I don't think the implication of subdue quite gets the sense of the overall direction of the stories. Other translations put it slightly differently. The Good News says, "I'm putting you in charge." If you go to the Message, a modern paraphrase, you get God's instruction to us being, "Take charge, be responsible." I prefer that phrase, "be responsible." There is a considerable difference of opinion here. Is the earth just there to be exploited? which is what we have done for centuries and continue to do? Or is a vital aspect of God, what God asks us to do when we are put in charge, to be responsible, to replenish the earth? Has humanity misunderstood? Have we missed the point, or worse, intentionally ignored the wisdom of this teaching? I mean, just ask any gardener or a farmer about the importance of replenishing the nutrients in the soil year on year so that the plants will continue to grow and thrive. So why just constantly dig other stuff out of the ground and consequently cause pollution to other parts of the environment? Why do we ignore God's instruction to replenish in these situations? Which is why the passage from Job struck me as being of such importance right now, with some powerful voices wanting to expand coal mining, whilst so many others call for a change to a more sustainable way of living. Where is wisdom to be found? Now, I know it's sort of out of context, but in Job 28, it is clearly not to be found down a mine, either looking for gold or silver or gemstones or useful metals that can be refined from the rock. And the concluding comments in this passage, I remind you of them, speak loud and clear. God alone knows the way, knows the place where wisdom is found, because he sees the ends of the earth, sees everything under the sky. When God gave the wind its power and determined the size of the sea, when God decided where the rain would fall and the path that the thunderclouds travel, it was then he saw wisdom and tested its worth. He gave it his approval. God said to humans, "Be you to be wise, you must have reverence for the Lord. To understand, you must turn from evil." The only source of true wisdom is God. It is vitally important to try to do all that we can to seek God's guidance first and foremost. To do anything else would risk sin. And sin, of course, is intentionally turning away from God. I mean, just think about it for a moment. Wouldn't it be a really good plan by the devil to encourage us to destroy what God has made, to despoil our home, and in so doing, cause suffering and death? And place millions into a situation just like Job's, where his livelihood and health are suddenly taken from him. Now that we know what damage climate extremes have on people's lives, shouldn't we be doing something about the gospel imperative to look after the poor and the dispossessed? Shouldn't we turn away from evil and turn to God and listen to the wisdom of our role as caretakers of what God has given us? Shouldn't we remember to balance our power to subdue with God's instruction to replenish? God said to human beings, "To be wise, you must have reverence for the Lord." Maybe the time has come to make use of the wisdom that enables us to live more sustainably and in far greater harmony with the balance of our planet that God set in place. to find ways to take far more care and to replenish. After all, we are part of that circle of life, that complex of interconnections of God's creation, and we do well to be aware of that. Today we give thanks to God for our harvest, the fact that we are so incredibly fortunate to have enough to live and enough to eat in this beautiful place. But let us remember that we have sisters and brothers who need our help. And that involves direct help, like all of our charity work, of which Tools with a Mission and One Drop is just a part. We also have a responsibility to turn away from evil actions that harm others and use the wisdom that we have discovered, like green energy and so much more, to find ways to not just exploit the earth, but to replenish it. Amen.